Good morning. This is Jan Kane reading to you from the commercial news from Danville. Our date today is January 9th. Our headline story is City to Celebrate King Holiday. The byline is Jennifer Bailey. Martin Luther King Jr. Celebration Committee member Franklin Bourne said the annual motorcade parade and other programs that are part of the city's two-day celebration of the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday are not about color. Bourne said it's about everybody coming out, with some of the parade participants holding hands and singing spiritual hymns. I like the unity, he said. It's like one happy family, he also said, about everyone getting together for the celebration. This year's theme for the Martin Luther King Jr. Celebration Committee's annual two-day celebration is Hope, Living as Peacemakers in a Violent World. The celebration begins with the MLK Scholarship Banquet at 4 p.m. Sunday at the Days Hotel, 77 North Gilbert Street. The banquet will feature a performance by God's Posse, a gospel group from Chicago. Also, the banquet will include the presentation of the $4,000 MLK scholarship to a Danville graduating high school senior who plans to pursue an education at an institution of higher learning. The admission fee for the banquet is $20. The second program on Monday morning, January 15th, will begin with the motorcade parade. The lineup for the motorcade parade will begin at 10 a.m. at Main Street and Logan Avenue. The procession will start at 10:30 a.m. The motorcade will turn east on Main Street and then travel north on Vermilion Street. It will turn right on Seminary Street, travel until it gets to the corner of Jackson and Seminary, and make a left onto Jackson Street. It will then travel on Jackson Street to the corner of Jackson and Williams, and the group will pause for a small ceremony at the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Monument. The procession then will proceed west on Williams Street to Vermilion Street, turn right on Vermilion Street, then turn left onto Davis and park on the northwest side of St. James United Methodist Church's parking lot. The celebration service at St. James United Methodist Church will start at 11:30 a.m. January 15th. The Reverend Dr. Rose Booker Jones, who is the Mississippi River District Superintendent, Illinois Great Rivers, of the United Methodist Church, will serve as the speaker for the program. Also, the Danville MLK Mass Choir, under the direction of Brett Dupree, will perform. The public is invited, and there is no admission fee. What it means to me is everybody is equal. Everybody has the same rights, Bourne said about the theme for this year's celebration. Everybody is trying to work and have a good life and not have to worry about injustice, he said. Bourne has been a part of the celebration committee for about 5 years. Sandra Finch, who helps organize the celebration and is human relations administrator with the city, is marking her 25th year with the celebration. She said it's always exciting and meaningful this time of year, having these annual events and awarding the scholarship. For banquet tickets or additional information, contact Committee Chairwoman Mary Thompson at 442-7917 or the Danville Human Relations Department at Danville City Hall at 431-2280. Our next article is about Jerry Van Dyke. It's titled, Residents Recall Comedian's Zest for Life. The byline is Mary Wyckoff. According to stories from friends, Jerry Van Dyke's high school career wasn't wasted. He used the time to come up with comedy scripts. Faye Norbutt Willett, who shared a home room at Danville High School with Van Dyke, recalled a time when she said, Jerry, are you studying? He answered, No, I'm working on my material. I've got to make it in show business. That hard work in study hall paid off, as Van Dyke went on to become a well-known comedian and actor. The Danville native died Friday at his Arkansas ranch at 86. Since learning about his death over the weekend, some Danville residents have been reminiscing about their school days with the comedian or encounters with him on his many visits to his hometown. Jerry had a zest for life. He loved his friends and had a good time wherever he was, Linda Blair, age 81, of Danville, said. I want people to know the sweet side of Jerry. I'm going to miss him. Blair's late husband, Richard, and Jerry were friends since grade school. The Blairs stayed in touch with Van Dyke and his wife, Shirley, and went on cruises together. They brought a lot of happiness into our lives, Blair said of the Van Dykes. Blair remains close to Shirley, who called her after Jerry died. "She's having a rough time," Blair said. "She devoted her life to him. They had a wonderful life together. There wasn't a day they weren't together." "The Van Dykes were together 40 years," Blair said. Blair said she and Jerry would talk on the phone, but in recent years he could barely talk. Even before his car accident a couple of years ago, he was having pain from back surgery and other health issues. "There will be no services, and Van Dyke has been buried on the Arkansas ranch where his mother Hazel is buried. The ranch has been in Shirley's family for years," she said. People who met Van Dyke remark on his sense of humor. "He was a natural-born comedian," Willett said. "We all loved him. Van Dyke used to appear as a comedy act during assemblies at DHS, but when his material started to get off color, the principal would pull him off the stage. His classmates objected to the removal," Willett said with a laugh. Van Dyke graduated with Willett in 1951, although he should have graduated with the 1949 class. Still, he came almost every year to the reunions, which usually combined classes. "At the reunions, he would hold court," Willett said. "He just kept us in stitches." His wife Shirley was a professional singer and would entertain as well. His first wife, Carol Johnson, attended DHS, Willett said, and there are relatives in Catlin. One year, the class was collecting money to buy a special computer for a classmate who had an ailment, such as muscular dystrophy, that required him to use advanced technology. Van Dyke and his wife said they would match whatever the class raised, and they presented a check when they were in town. "He was good to all of us," Willett recalled. "Everybody was Jerry's friend. Everybody loved him. Each of us has a story." When Van Dyke came home for the Fisher Theater fundraiser in 1988, some of his friends gathered at the Ramada Inn to visit with him. Van Dyke said he was hungry and wanted Steak and Shake, which Willett got for him. Willett and others, including the Blairs, went to the Danville City Council one year to request a special day to honor Van Dyke. "Jerry always remembered us, and Danville has to remember Jerry," Willett said then. They requested some type of sign to honor him as well. A few days later, the city decided to erect Celebrity Way, including signs along Illinois Route 1 honoring local people who became famous. On June 4, 1994, the city proclaimed it Jerry Van Dyke Day in Danville. He was honored with a parade in downtown Danville, a dance concert at Danville High School, and a dinner at the Lamplighter Restaurant. Willett also had a recital in honor of Van Dyke at her studio, Phase Dance, with 300 dancers attending. Van Dyke came on stage and talked to the students about the importance of finishing school, going for their goals, and persevering. He told the students he was glad he had finished school, Willett said. Willett had taught Van Dyke dance at Cromwell School of Dance, and his grandmother lived upstairs. Willett continues to be a member of the Professional Dancers Society in Beverly Hills and continues to teach at Jody's Dance Unlimited. Like others, Willett recalled Van Dyke's passion for tennis. One day she received a phone call from Van Dyke, who said, "I'm playing tennis with your stepson." Bobby Willett was tennis pro at Little Rock Racquet Club. The two had played tennis at night by the light of car headlamps. Willett said she was sad to hear about Van Dyke's death, saying, "I just cried when I heard about my classmate. He was the best." She hopes the city will name a street or park, or even the Danville Tennis Club, in honor of Van Dyke. Even at 84, she said she will march in support of something being done for her comedic classmate. We have a follow-up story, also about Jerry Van Dyke, entitled Neighbor Remembers Van Dyke's Early Years. The byline is Carol Ream. Bill Montegerard, who was a neighbor of Jerry Van Dyke's when they both lived on Walnut Street as teenagers, said his funny friend entertained crowds as far back as he could remember. Van Dyke died Friday at his Arkansas ranch at 86. "I've known him all my life," said Montegerard, 86, who is the retired owner of B&J Music. "He was a neighbor more than anything. When we were in high school, he used to do a comedy act in one of the taverns," he recalled. Montegerard was a teenager as well when he formed a band that performed at a Danville High School senior prom in the late 1940s and at venues around Danville. Inevitably, Van Dyke would show up at those venues wanting to steal a little bit of the spotlight for his comedy skit. "I had my own band when I was 17, he said. "When I had my dance jobs, he'd want to break in. He and his buddy would want to put on their act." Sometimes an unassuming Montegerard became part of Van Dyke's shtick. One time he knocked over my music stand and the sheet music went all over, and he made fun of that, he chuckled. Montgerard said he didn't mind giving his band a short break to help out his neighbor. We lived in the same neighborhood for quite a while, he said. In fact, one summer day, Montgerard remembers a tipsy Jerry staggering down Walnut Street with his older brother looking for him a short time later. I was sitting on the porch and I saw Jerry go one way and Dick went the other way, he said. I told Dick which way Jerry went and he found him. Another time, a young Van Dyke asked his friend for a favor. He was going to perform at a party and wanted to borrow a microphone, Montgerard remembered. When he returned it, he said, "You might want to hang on to it. It's going to be worth something someday." It turns out he had dropped it and it didn't work anymore, he laughed. In later years, Van Dyke would sometimes ask for his old friend's help with musical entertainment at fundraisers and other public appearances when he would come to town. I was part of a program he did in the 90s in Danville. He had the audience in control. He was a professional all the way, Montgerard said admiringly. He was quite the guy and truly a good entertainer. Our next story is entitled Salvation Army Seeks Help to Meet Goal. The byline is Carol Ream. Danville Salvation Army officials hope the community will rally around the organization to help meet their annual budget goal. As of late last week, the local Salvation Army, a United Way of Danville area agency, was short about $16,000 of its $100,000 overall goal, which includes funds raised through the Red Kettle campaign in November and December, as well as mail appeals and online donations that run through the end of the month. This year's goal was the same as last year's. Last year, a surge of monetary donations arrived at the Corps' headquarters at 855 East Fairchild Street by the campaign's January 31st deadline, pushing the Corps past its $100,000 goal to $106,000. Lieutenant John Woodard is hopeful that that will happen again this year, with additional donations earmarked for the Danville Corps being made online, sent in the mail, or dropped off in person before January 31st. "We are in need of more donations," he said. "I'm hoping more will come in. It was a difficult year. The goal is $100,000, but I still think we might fall a little short," he added. The Red Kettle campaign, which makes up more than half of the annual Salvation Army budget, ended up $6,217 short of this year's goal of $65,000. Mail appeals so far are about $10,000 short of its goal. Grant money, United Way money, and other donations make up the remainder of the annual budget. That money covers the local Salvation Army's day-to-day operations for a year, including social services, programming, bills, employees' pay, food pantry, Christmas food baskets, and clothing vouchers, and help citizens pay for utilities, rent, or shelter and medicine. Despite receiving a rare South African Krugerrand coin worth about $1,350 on November 30th in a kettle in front of County Market on North Vermilion Street, Woodard said he believes one reason the Red Kettle campaign fell $6,217 short of its goal when it ended December 24th was because many kettles were unmanned in the final days of the campaign. "The public came through with donations as well as before, and we want to thank the people of Danville for their generosity, but there were little things that happened," he said, about what prompted the campaign's shortfall. "The paid bell ringers weren't as dedicated," he lamented, explaining that some left their posts early before the campaign officially ended on December 24th. A new initiative to help the Danville Salvation Army reach its goal by placing a sign with the names or logos of local businesses, churches, or families near the Corps' 10 kettles in exchange for a sponsorship donation and a match of the funds collected in the sponsored kettle on a particular day had moderate success. Woodard said he was thankful for the Fairchild Animal Hospital sponsorship of a kettle during the campaign and hopes there will be more kettle sponsorships in the future. A successful fundraising event during the campaign was the Battle of the Badges, which pitted the Danville Police Department against the Danville Fire Department to see which one could raise the most money in their kettles in front of Walmart during two weekends in December. "We had a good time with the police and fire department's competition," Woodard said. "I want to thank them, too." Still, if the Danville Salvation Army can meet or exceed this year's annual budget goal, the Corps could serve more people, Woodard said. "The Red Kettle contributions are for operations and resources," he said. adding that extra funds could be used to focus on community needs. The Corps hired a consulting team last fall to conduct a community needs survey, the results of which are expected to be revealed in March. We will publicly identify the needs in the community with the results of the needs survey so we can focus and support those needs, Woodard said. Next, we'll turn to the death notices. Connie Casey. Connie Lynn Casey, age 64, of Bradenton, Florida, passed away Thursday, January 4th, 2018, after a short illness. The family will receive friends from 2 to 4 p.m. on Friday, January 12th, at Shannon Funeral Home, Town Chapel, 1015 14th Street West, in Bradenton, Florida. A memorial service will be held in Danville at a later date. Clara Meyer. Clara E. Meeks Meyer, age 86, of Danville, passed away Saturday, January 6th, at Presence Hospital in Danville. A celebration of her life will be held at a later date with all of her family. Cremation services are being arranged by Rotvet Funeral Services and Crematory. Elwood Ellis. Elwood James Ellis passed away January 4th, just 2 days before his 96th birthday. A celebration of Elwood's life will be held at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville on Monday, January 8th at 2 p.m. with Pastor Jim Blue officiating. Military rites will follow the service. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the disabled American veterans or a charity of one's choice. Anita K. High. Anita K. High, age 75, passed away Sunday, January 7th, at Presence United Medical Center in Danville. As per Anita's wishes, services will be private with an informal gathering at a later date. Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center is in charge of Anita's final wishes. Laura Ann McCrone. Laura Ann McCrone, age 55, of Catlin, passed away at 8:14 a.m. Sunday, January 7th, at her home. Funeral service will be at 1 p.m. Thursday at Robeson Chapel in Catlin, with Eli Spaulding officiating. Burial will be in Oak Ridge Cemetery in Catlin. Visitation is at 11 a.m. until service time at Robeson Chapel. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Carl Hospice or the charity of the donor's choice. Eugene L. Benskin. Eugene L. Benskin, age 68, of Pine Village, Indiana, passed away at 10:20 a.m. Friday, January 5th, at Franciscan Health, Lafayette East. Visitation will be 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Tuesday, January 9th, at Grady Funeral Home in Williamsport. Services will be there at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, Wednesday, January 10th, with Pastor Don Williams officiating. Interment will follow at Danville National Cemetery in Danville, Illinois. Memorial contributions may be made to the American Diabetes Association. William Edwards. William Dale Edwards, age 80, of Hoopston, passed away at 3:54 p.m. Friday, January 5th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A visitation will be held 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, January 10th at Anderson Funeral Home, 427 East Main Street in Hoopston. The funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. Thursday, January 11th, at the funeral home, with Pastor Jeff Alexander officiating. Burial will follow in Floral Hill Cemetery in Hoopston. Memorials may be made to the National Kidney Foundation, 30 East 33rd Street, New York, New York, 10016. Mark Thomas Johnson. Mark Thomas Johnson, age 60, returned to his heavenly home on January 4th. Through his wishes, Mark will be cremated and no services will be held. If you would like to honor Mark, the family would appreciate any donations to be given to the Wounded Warrior Project in his name. Ilo Mae Rush Reeder of rural Williamsport, Indiana, died at 9:50 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, Sunday, January 7th, as the result of injuries from a series of falls during her stay at a care facility. Visitation will be 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Wednesday, January 10th, at Grady Funeral Home in Williamsport. Services will be at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, Thursday, January 11th, at the funeral home with Reverend Charles B. Anderson officiating. Burial will follow at Jordan Cemetery in Pence, Indiana. Memorial contributions may be made to the donor's charity of choice. Elizabeth Crozier. Elizabeth Crozier, age 79, of Hoopston, died at 9:31 a.m. Monday, January 8th, at home. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Anderson Funeral Home, 427 East Main Street in Hoopston. Marie Rennick. Marie Rennick, age 84, of Danville, died Saturday, January 6th, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Pape Family Funeral Home, 10 East Williams Street in Danville. Mary Shusky. Mary Shusky, age 67, of Hoopston, died at 12:05 p.m. Sunday, January 7th, at home. Cremation rites will be accorded. No burial will be held. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday at Anderson Funeral Home, 427 East Main Street in Hoopston. Our next article is entitled, Trustees OK Purchase of Vacant IGA. It's from Oakwood. Village trustees have approved a purchase agreement for the vacant IGA building. Right now, we want to gain control over the blighted property, Village President Clay Woodard said of the site at 100 South Scott Street. Woodard added, Village officials and current owners, the Small Business Administration, and Catlin Bank are still negotiating a purchase price. In 2010, Georgetown native Jesse Mitzdarfer purchased the former Oakwood Market, which had been shuttered for more than a year, and opened the Oakwood IGA. However, Mitzdarfer, who also owned and operated IGAs in Catlin and Marshall, closed the store in Marshall in October 2016, and the other two just prior to Thanksgiving that same year, citing declining sales and fierce competition from larger grocery chains, big box retailers, and discount stores. Since that time, Oakwood officials had actively courted other grocers to reopen the store, Woodard said. That was our number one choice, he said, adding, no one bit, even when the village offered some incentives. With the larger box stores buying in volume, it's hard for a small town grocer to make the numbers work. So rather than let the building sit and deteriorate, Woodard said officials discussed purchasing the building and redeveloping the property with tax increment financing district funds. The property sits in the village's TIF 2 district. There are a number of avenues we could take, Woodard said, adding planning is still in the early stages. He said officials are considering a range of ideas from demolishing the building to make it shovel-ready for prospective businesses or building a community center there. Our village hall is small, but we're exploring all of our options at this point, Woodard said. Next is from the village of Rankin. Service truck comes in at lower cost. Village President Aaron Warren has purchased a bucket truck from the city of Paxton on Rankin's behalf. Warren said it cost $3,000, half of what he'd been authorized to spend by Rankin's village board. Warren said the 29-year-old truck is in, quote, very good condition and needs no immediate repairs. It has 40,000 miles, has all of its cables and hoses, looks new, and does not leak oil or fluids, Warren said. Our next story comes from Terre Haute, Indiana. It's entitled, Indiana Legislators to Focus on Opioid Problem. As opioid addiction continues to grip Indiana and the death toll mounts, legislators in the Indiana General Assembly have said they will use this year's session to address the deadly scourge. Lawmakers from the Wabash Valley recently commented on the issue, and while they all recognized the problem, solutions varied. Senator John Ford, Republican of Terre Haute, said it appears the legislature will take a multifaceted approach to the issue, with lawmakers looking to enable stiffer penalties for those enabling the issue, while also seeking avenues to help those already addicted. I think we're going to take a hard look at developing programs to help those addicted, Ford said. We need to be able to help those affected by helping treatment centers, like the Hamilton Center, get the resources they need to treat folks. He added that addressing issues facing the Department of Child Services could also go a long way toward providing more stable home lives for children across the state and reduce the chance of future substance abuse issues. I think it's clear that the DECS issue has opioid implications as well, Ford said. That's going to be a focus this session, which will in turn help kids that have parents with addiction issues. Representative Clive Kersey, Democrat of Terre Haute, said the root causes of opioid addiction, overprescription of pain medication, chief among them, need to be addressed before tangible results can be had. No question there's an opioid crisis in Indiana, but we need to be careful in how we draft legislation to deal with it, Kersey said. And I really don't know how you do it because the overprescription of painkillers is the problem, and how do you control that without restricting the doctors? I don't know what the answer is, frankly, and I've not seen a good bill yet that deals with it. Representative Bruce Borders, Republican from Jacksonville, said he views the problem as a spiritual one and openly questioned the effectiveness passing more laws would have on the crisis. Look, I know we can draft new laws, and I voted for laws that address this issue before, but we have a huge spiritual issue there, Borders said. I try to look at issues like this and understand what the cause is and ask myself, will passing another law solve the problem? When we were fighting methamphetamine, we had some success there. But no, we've just transitioned from a meth crisis to an opioid crisis. I just don't want to pretend that I have the answer that I could wave a magic wand and solve it all. Representative Bob Heaton, Republican of Terre Haute, echoed Borders' sentiment, saying he understands there is a problem and that something needs to be done about it, but exactly what remains up for debate. Something has to be done, but the question is exactly what, Heaton said. People can say we need to throw more money toward that, and that may be the case, but how much will that help, and how much do they need to do that? But just passing one or two bills is not going to fix it and make this issue go away. It's going to take a long time to solve, and we'll just have to see how that turns out. And now we'll turn to the community briefs from Danville. The 1949 Danville High School class will meet for lunch at 11:30 a.m. Saturday at Jocko's Pizza Inn. The American Legion Post 210 will serve spaghetti beginning at 5 p.m. today with a band playing during the evening. Wednesday's menu features homemade meatloaf and pies. Thursday will have wings. Friday's list includes fish and chicken, hamburgers and tenderloins. And Saturday will feature pizza. Meals begin at 5 p.m. All are welcome. The Library Plans Programs. The Page Turner's Book Club at the Danville Public Library will discuss Before We Were Yours by Lisa Wingate at 3 p.m. Thursday in the second floor conference room. From 4:30 to 5:30 p.m. Thursday, the Wonder Garden Club will explore bulb planting in the Children's Program Room. The program is for children ages 5 to 11, children under 8 with a caregiver. Also Thursday, Tween Gaming is a chance for children ages 8 to 11 to game together in the Children's Program Room from 6 to 7 p.m. And we'll close with one correction. A bullet item in a story about the Veterans Administration Ileana Healthcare System should read, another accomplishment in 2017 was offering direct scheduling in audiology and optometry. That means, in most instances, veterans don't need a referral from their primary care doctor, and they can directly schedule themselves. This year, podiatry clinic, nutrition clinic, wheelchair and mobility clinics, and amputee clinics also will offer direct scheduling. Some information was incorrect in the story, which was published Friday. This has been Jan Kane reading to you from the Danville Commercial News, dated Tuesday, January 9th. Have a great day. I look forward to reading with you again.